is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
I am recording now.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. Jason, we are here on a very special night of the NBA, Zion's Eve.
Zion Eve. I thought you were going to say the day after my third child was born, but we'll take Zion Eve.
Well, we're just looking at it from an NBA perspective. Congratulations to you. For those of you who are out there who are listening, I know we talked about it last week briefly, but Jason welcomed a brand new daughter into the world yesterday. Oh, yeah. So congratulations to him.
Here, so we're excited, and I'm excited to have, you know, we already don't have, we have a lot of sleepless nights with the podcast. Now I'm looking forward to sleepless nights with the podcast and with the child. So it'll be quite fun.
Well, you got to get out of your man-to-man defense and go to a zone, so good luck with that.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Just so you know, 2-3 was easier than 1-2, at least in my experience.
Well,
so
hopefully it'll be the same thing. Everyone I've talked to has said that, so I'm hoping that's the case. So.
All right, well, Zion's Eve, the birth of your child, and I think I just watched the worst NBA game in my entire viewing history, watching the Cavs and Knicks yesterday.
And it didn't involve the Houston Rockets.
It did not involve the Houston Rockets. It involved our own Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks, that I got to sit through that in person. And
hey, there was one good thing out of it, Mike.
What's that?
You didn't pay for the tickets.
That's correct. It was a debacle beyond debacles. So we can get into that a little bit at some point. But, man, what a terrible game that was.
Yeah. All right, so I think it's the most prudent for us to talk about the game tonight. Now, what's really bizarre, Mike, Tuesday night we only have one game in the NBA. Now, I know it was because of the Martin Luther King games, and they had like 14 games yesterday, but it's just bizarre that on a Tuesday night in the middle of the season there was one game.
It's weird. Why did they only put one game tonight? Like, why not just play all 15 yesterday and just give everybody the day off today? Why did the Clippers and Mavericks have to play tonight? Strange.
I don't know the answer to that question, but it's definitely bizarre. So, but anyway, so the Clippers played the Mavericks, and the Clippers ended up winning. But the big story out of the game was Dwight Powell, non-contact Achilles injury. Now they didn't say that it was a torn or a ruptured Achilles, but based on what I saw and everything that I've heard, it looks pretty bad, and he's probably gone for the season. And my Mavericks, I don't know now, Mike. I mean, I think they're still a playoff team, but I don't think they can do anything if they don't have Dwight Powell. I don't want to say that he's the third player on the team that kind of drives them, but he definitely brings some physicality that the rest of the team doesn't necessarily have, and I'm just concerned that they're not going to be able to do anything now.
Well, let's put it this way. It definitely weakens their rotations. Clearly, Powell has become a key part of what they do, pick and roll with Luka and dive into the rim. And as you said, he's a physical guy that rebounds and does a lot of good things for them as a quality role player. And so when he's out, now you're looking at probably more Maxi Kleba, maybe even some, Yeah, I don't know. They're going to have to fill that. They're going to have to fill that spot.
If he's out for the year, Mike, is Tristan Thompson a Maverick at the end of, by the end of the season?
I mean, it's possible. I guess it depends on what. I mean, Dallas, in theory, I'm not sure what they have to trade out because they traded a bunch of stuff to get Luka. So I don't know what their exact trade parameters can be, what they're able to trade and what they're not. But certainly if Powell is done for the season, you would have to think that Dallas would be at least trying to kick the tires on some centers around the league or guys that, you know, some front court players. And Tristan fits the bill. It's just a matter of what does Dallas have that the Cavs want, and how do you make that fit salary cap considerations and all that stuff. So I'm not sure what Dallas's cap situation is right now and what they can trade in terms of picks, because, like I said, I think they gave up a boatload to get Luka in the door. I think they gave up two firsts maybe in that deal.
Yeah.
So I just don't know what they can trade. But certainly Tristan would look pretty good filling that spot for them, you'd have to think. But, yeah.
You'd actually have someone that has won a championship and done something as opposed to no one else on the team has done anything.
Right. So they're going to have to
fill. I guess Seth Curry's been around with his brother, but that's
fine. Yeah. You're going to have to fill that spot. And now, you know, we had talked about whether or not Dallas could, you know, can they win a first-round matchup depending on who, you know, where they sit and where they play. Maybe, but I think without Powell, it makes it a lot more difficult for them to be able to, you know, to foresee them certainly getting out of the second round, you know, depending on what the matchup is in the first round, maybe, who knows. But, the Powell loss definitely hurts them for sure.
So let's stay in the Western Conference, Mike. And, well, I guess it was the Western Conference versus Eastern Conference game yesterday. The headline game, I would say, right? I mean, it was the most interesting game of the day yesterday. Well, until Dame Lillard went crazy. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But the Lakers completely laying an egg against the Celtics. Like, I don't even understand it. Now, I didn't realize until just about 25, 30 minutes ago before we started talking, I was listening to the Simmons pod. I didn't realize that LeBron choptered to his son's game and then left his son's game to come to the game. That's not really how I would prepare for an NBA game, Mike.
Probably not what he'd be doing in the NBA Finals, but certainly during the regular season, LeBron has, quote, earned the right, to, I guess, to be able to fly in and out as he pleases.
If I would have known that, though, Mike, I would have definitely picked I would have bet some fake money on Boston. Like, seriously, like, I think it's pretty obvious that he was not very focused. Now, granted, he had actually pretty good game, but I don't necessarily know that the game plan was cohesive. And Anthony Davis looked like he was the one that was on the chopper. But,
well, he's coming back from his injury, and Boston played really well in that game. Obviously, when you win by 32 points over the team that's in first place in one of the conferences, you played a pretty good game. But, yeah, LeBron played 29 minutes and scored 15. Still had 13 assists in 29 minutes. It's pretty good. Davis really didn't do much at all. Played 23 minutes and scored 9. And Boston just played really well.
Hey, this is my clapping, Mike. Do you know who this clapping is for?
Who's that clapping for?
Kemba Walker. He finally beat LeBron.
0-28. Now 1-28.
I don't know what that percentage. That he's won 3.5% of his games against LeBron now. I couldn't believe – so you and I were talking yesterday, and I said I couldn't believe that, like, LeBron had beaten him 28 straight times. Like, you had to think there was one game that Charlotte team would have pulled out at some point.
You would have thought.
Between the Heat and the Cavs. Because I always felt like the Cavs would lay stinkers in Charlotte, but I guess that was before Kemba was there. That would be my guess, at least.
Or maybe it was just – yeah, I don't know. It was a very surprising stat. Do you remember who the number one player domination over another player was from that graphic?
No, I don't remember. I don't remember who was
the it? Well, the guy on top of the winning percentage was Michael Jordan. The guy at the bottom of the winning percentage, Sherman Douglas.
That's a name I didn't think we'd ever mention on the Hoopheads podcast.
No.
Unless he was a guest, Mike.
Michael, 30-0 against Sherman Douglas. So, and that record will stand in eternity because I don't think either one of them is coming back to the NBA anytime soon. So,
yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Poor Sherm.
But I don't know. I don't read too much into it. Like you said, it's a regular season game. But I just thought it was interesting that the Lakers kind of laid an egg, especially because they had won 10 of their last 11, pretty much dominating. The only game they had lost was to Orlando, but they didn't have Anthony Davis, and there were some other kind of weird things that went on in that game. So I was kind of floored. I wouldn't have expected it. Now, granted, I didn't know LeBron choppered into the game like an hour and a half beforehand. So who knows? It's just a regular season game, and LeBron doesn't care.
Right. And Boston, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but hadn't they lost like four in a row heading into that game? So Boston was kind of, I think, chomping at the bit to be able to come back and sort of right the ship. And they got good performances from their big three guys, and Hayward chipped in with 16. So Boston, I don't know. I'm not sold that Boston is really a contender to get to the finals in the East. Maybe if things broke completely right and somebody else got upset, they could get there. But I just don't know. When you look at their how they match up with some of these other teams at the top of the East, I don't think they match up very well with Philly. I don't think anybody necessarily matches up well with Milwaukee. So the Heat, you know, the Heat's playing really well right now. They really are. And they're a team that we talked about last week a little bit that, you know, they're going to compete and they're going to play hard. And I don't know that they're as good. I don't know that their ceiling is as high as Philly and Milwaukee, but they're going to play hard. They're going to make you beat them. They're not going to beat themselves by laying down and giving away games.
Did you hear the stat that Jimmy Butler – oh, no, you probably didn't hear the stat because it was on the Shaq – or not Shaq House, the Fairway Rollin', which I know you don't listen to that.
Did Jimmy Butler
shooting 26% from behind the arc this year?
Well,
that's pretty bad for him.
That is pretty bad. I don't know what his career. I'd be interested to know what his career shooting percentage is.
I remember what Simmons said was it's like around 35-36%, and he's shooting 26% this year.
I mean, he's not a great 3-point shooter. I mean, when I think of Jimmy Butler, I don't think of him as a knockdown, banging home threes type shooter. But
he does like to shoot them.
Well, he's only averaging, though. Okay, so I pulled up their stats while we were talking. He's shooting 26.5% from three, but he's only taking 2.6 threes a game. Okay. So he's not chucking it. He shoots 82% from the line.
So he's shooting a lot of the mid range. He's kind of shooting the Carmelo shots. Like he shoots a lot of shots. You know.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. And he gets he gets to the basket and, you know, does some things. So I don't know. I'm trying to find his career stats here.
I felt like he said 36, but I could be wrong.
Let me see. Career. Here we go. Career. He's shooting 33.6%.
Okay. So
on 2.7.
33.6. Okay.
Yeah, on 2.7. You know, 2.7 attempts per game. So actually, probably I would guess 33% is probably close to league average. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So he's probably about a league average 3-point shooter, but for a guy who scores as much as he does in today's game, you probably want him to be able to make more, but it is what it is.
All right. So then last night, Mike, I didn't intend on watching the Blazers-Warriors game because I said, I don't even care about this game. Why am I watching it? So I just flipped it on real quick, and I see that Dame had 40 points with a minute left in the third. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to hang around, Mike, and watch and see what does the game look like. And, of course, Portland's trailing. They have no one else. C.J. McCollum's not playing. Obviously, Nurkic isn't back, which I heard that the first week of February is when he's coming back, Mike. They talked about it last night in the broadcast. So I think it's coming. It's coming soon. Anyways, and then all of a sudden he just goes absolutely bonkers and just keeps hitting threes, keeps hitting shots, and he had 54, and they went to overtime. I don't know if you saw the highlights. Did you see the highlights of the game?
I did.
That three that he hit to tie the game with 5.6 seconds left, ridiculous. Like, just fading to the right, not set, not square to the basket, and he hits it. And then in overtime, he ended up with 61. I think my favorite part of it was they interviewed him after the game, and he said, you know, I really wanted to get to 60 a few times in my career. And I feel like he got to 60 early. Was it earlier this year or last year? He did get to 60. But anyways, he goes, I had an opportunity where I could have had more, but I missed two free throws. And I was just really glad at the end of the game I knocked down the two free throws to make it, to get to 61. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and I'm glad we won the game. And
But the funny part of that is, like, you know, you kind of laugh at that and say, oh, you know, whatever, he's trying to get to 60. That doesn't seem like he should be talking about that. But the reality is, anybody who's played basketball, you know that you're keeping an eye on what you're doing in addition to your team. And so that's a pretty honest response that he wants to get to 60. And
he needed to get to 60. I mean,
he needed to get to 60 in order for them to win. I heard an interesting stat, and I just looked it up again while we were talking here, that there's only six players who have scored 60 more than once.
And he's one of them.
He's one of them. He's the only guy under 6'2", or six whatever 6'2" and under.
Let me see. Harden's got to be one.
You're gonna get. You're gonna get four out of the. You'll get four out of the other five. I'm guessing.
Harden, Kobe. I would guess Wilt.
Yep.
Harden, Kobe, Wilt. I don't think MJ did it. Did MJ score two games 60? I don't think he. I'll say MJ just because I feel like I have to. I don't think he did though.
He did.
Oh, okay. All right. Who's the fifth? Is it like? Is it an obscure guy?
I mean, definitely not obscure, but old school. Back from the played for the Lakers.
It's not Irving, is it?
No.
No. In that era, though.
I don't know who Irving is from the Lakers.
Oh, not Irving. Oh, God.
I'll give you another hint. He used to be the GM of the Clippers.
Oh, now I really should know the
answer. Oh, man, now you're going to look really bad.
Oh, wait, Jerry West.
No.
No, who is it then?
The other Laker from that era.
Oh, I'm brain farting right now. I don't know.
Oh, man. Elgin Baylor.
Oh, Elgin Baylor. That's right. Elgin Baylor. Oh, yeah. He was a great GM for the Clippers.
He presided over some of the best Clippers moments in history.
Hey.
All right. Now here's the question. Here's the next question for you. How many times did Wilt score 60?
Oh, more than 10.
I'll give you the other numbers. Dame twice. Harden four times. Elgin four times. Jordan five. Kobe six. How many for Wilt?
Probably 32.
32 is exactly right.
Is that really, really the correct answer?
That's the correct answer.
Okay, I swear to God, I didn't look it up. I swear to God, Mike.
I don't know, that's pretty good. Well, that makes up for you not knowing Elgin Baylor.
I pulled that number out of the sky.
32 times over 60.
This is how I picked that number. My two sons were born on the 23rd, and I just flipped the number, 32.
All right, nice work. In a way, that seems low. When you think about the season.
Considering that's all he did was he was just ginormous and they just passed him the ball and he just dunked it, right?
I mean, you think about the season he scored, he averaged 50. You got to figure, you got to get a lot of 60-point games in there to average 50.
Well, that's the season
50.
He had 100 though, right?
Right, but I'm just saying, just in general.
Did they have an 82-game season at that point?
I'm pretty sure that the 82-game season has been in place for since I can remember. But that's an interesting fact.
Were you alive when he had 100 points, Mike?
I was not alive when he scored 100. As old as I might be, I'm not that old. Would have loved to have been there to see that.
You could have gone to the game and then gotten some Hershey chocolate right after the game. You were right
that's
there.
Right. Do you know how many people were actually in attendance to that game?
I feel like it was a low number. I don't feel like
It was very low. I forget the exact number, but it was like 4,000 something. Because it clearly wasn't played. Because it was played, as you said, in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Well, listen,
Philly.
I'm sure the old story though. I'm sure there was more than there's probably more than 4,000 people claiming they were at that game. Right?
I'm sure there is.
All right, so I guess we should move on, right?
Move on. That was a good tangent.
Yeah, it was definitely a good tangent. All right, so the next one we want to talk about is CP3 and the Thunder. And I think if any of us would have prognosticated how well the Thunder have played this season, you know, we talked a lot about the Grizzlies last week and how they've played, they had played so well, and you know, but I don't think anyone would have thought that the Thunder would be playing this well, and I think they're a lock for the playoffs, right, Mike? I mean, you'd have to imagine they're a lock at this point. They're close to a lock.
I mean, you barring injury, I think you would say that, yes.
Barring a hamstring injury.
I think you have to say they're a lock. Right now, they're 4.5 games up on what is Memphis in the 8th seed. And clearly, there's that divide. And they're only 2 games behind Houston right now, who's lost 4 in a row.
Yeah, well, speaking of Houston, they played Houston yesterday. Houston was up by like 15 at home going into the fourth quarter, Mike. And Chris Paul once again just took the team, put him on their back, put him on his back. Him and Shai Gilgeous, I can't say his name, Shai Gilgeous Alexander.
SGA.
SGA.
Listen, you got to just go with SGA from now on.
The stats that I sent you to James Harden yesterday. 29 points on 29 shots. He was 1 of 17 from behind the arc. That is some great quality shooting right there. Like, listen, I'm not lying to you, Mike, and I know he's one of the best scorers, and LeBron said earlier he's one of the most prolific scorers in NBA history. I don't deny that. But the second that he's 1 for 10 from behind the arc, I have to censor myself. I'd take his butt and put him on the bench and tell him, you are not allowed to jack up any more threes. I don't care how much you're getting paid. You're not making them today. You're 1 for 10. Because there was some point that he was 1 for 10. I would tell him, that's not going to win us this game. You need to go to the basket and do your thing where, you know, draw fouls. And the threes aren't falling. So I don't know that there's a coach in the NBA would have that kind of chutzpah to do that to James Harden. But I'm sorry. You can't let him shoot 17 three-pointers and only make one of them. You just
yeah, but here's the
it.
Thing. Here's the thing. The whole entire Rockets system – whatever that system is, Harden dribble around and everybody else stand there. The whole system is built upon James Harden shooting threes or getting to the rim. And they've proven time and time again, and clearly to their detriment when you think about the 0 of 27 against the Warriors, that they're going to keep shooting them because the math says that eventually they're going to make enough that they're going to be able to overcome those misses. And clearly he's going to have nights where 1 of 17, it's as you said, it's unfathomable that a player could go 1 for 17 from 3. You went back and you told Larry Bird, hey, at some point, Larry, you were 1 for 17 in a game from 3. His brain might explode.
He would jump off a bridge, Mike.
Yeah, but it's just it's a different era. It's the way that the Rockets play. They're not going to change the way they play for anything, regardless of how many shots they miss, because they believe in the system, they believe in the math. And we've said it time and time and time and time again. My response to you when you sent me that text was Big Game James. Yeah. It has to mean something playing against Chris Paul, whatever the animosity was between the two of them. And
it's because he didn't want him in the State Farm commercials anymore. That's what happened.
I mean, is it a huge – does this regular season game between the Rockets and the Thunder really mean anything? No. But should it mean something on a personal level? Should it be a big game for James Harden? Yeah, you would think he'd want to beat up on Chris Paul, right? I mean, yeah. It just makes sense. And the fact that – comes out and goes 1 for 17 in that kind of game, it just, to me, it's just indicative of the fact that I don't want to depend on James Harden to win me a big game. And until he proves otherwise, I'm going to continue to say the same thing until he proves me wrong. And maybe one day he will, but I just think that system and him as a player, I just don't think it works, because basketball is a game that requires rhythm. It requires you to touch the ball. It requires you to feel like you're a part of something bigger than yourself. And I think if you're the Rockets, other players, and all you do is just stand there and then have to play defense, it's tough. It's tough to come through in big moments when that's what happens. And Harden has proven that he's not always going to come through in big moments. So if I'm a Rockets fan, I'm very dubious of their chances. And clearly we're not Rockets fans. So
what? Come on now. All right. Anything else you want to say about the Thunder? Like, is there anything else you have about them?
Well, I think if we let off with the Chris Paul declining to renegotiate his contract in order to be traded to a contender and talking about that. And there's a reason why he wanted to be the head of the players union, to be able to get that money and get that clause in there with the veterans and how much they could be paid. And so it makes sense that he wouldn't want to give back any money. I think, and I don't think anybody out there can necessarily begrudge him that right. Keep your money. And who knows? I mean, if you go and you allow a team to renegotiate, or you want to restructure the contract, and then they could ship you who knows where. So I don't have any problem with Chris Paul doing that. I don't have any problem with players getting their money, because we all know that it's a business. We all know that teams will trade players. And as much as I don't necessarily like, as a fan, I don't necessarily like this quote player empowerment era where players are forcing their way to new teams and they're ending their, they're saying, we're not going to play under this contract when I still have a year and a half left and I need to get out of here. As much as I don't like that part of it, I do think that the players having more say in what goes on, I think, is probably a good thing, because for so long, owners could kind of have carte blanche with them, and their ability to control what goes on, I think, is something that ultimately, if I'm a player, I tend to side with the players, I guess. When it comes to owners versus players, I tend to fall on the side of the players.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so the next thing we want to talk about is the trades that have kind of happened over the last few weeks. And we didn't really talk about the other one. I guess they happened last week after we recorded. So we had the Hawks got Jeff Teague back, Mike. Bring it back.
Bring him back the All-Star band.
Jeff Teague and Trevion Graham for Alan Crabb. And I don't really think that means anything. It was more of a salary dump, right, for Minnesota? That would be my guess.
Yeah, the speculation is that Minnesota did that to be able to clear space to try to do something else. And, what that something else is remains to be seen. So I think that's
the first trade. And then the second trade, my favorite part of this, I'll tell you in a minute. The Kings traded Ariza, Gabriel, and Wenyen Gabriel and Caleb Swanigan to Portland for Kent Bazemore, Anthony Tolliver, and 2 second-round draft picks. I'll let you say what you think about that trade and what you think it means, if it means anything. And then I've got a funny thing that I saw that I wanted to share.
I don't think it means much. Again, I think I look at it as Portland was able to clear some space by getting rid of Bazemore's contract. I think I read somewhere where they saved $12 million in salary and luxury tax payments by making that deal. So to me, that's a deal where Portland gets some financial benefit. Potentially, if they want to make a trade, they opened up a little bit of space maybe to be able to do that, maybe have some other salaries that they can trade out if they're trying to acquire another piece. Portland's interesting. We've talked about them a couple times. I mean, right now they're 7 games under 500. They're currently sitting in the 10th spot. They're not very, they're only a half game, or actually I guess they're a full game out. No, 2 games out, sorry. They're 16 back and Memphis is 14 back. So could Portland climb up into that 8th spot? Sure they could. The question is, do they want to sacrifice anything of value from the future in order to be able to climb into the 8th seed and get beat by the Lakers or the Clippers, which in all likelihood, that's what would happen. Although, as we've said before, if Nurkic comes back, if they swing a trade and add a significant piece that could help them, maybe they're a frisky first-round opponent for one of the first 2 seeds. I don't think so. If I was them, I would sort of punt on this season and move on and try to make sure that I was well-positioned for next year. But I don't know what they're going to do. So those are my thoughts.
So my funny thing was, did you see Wenyen Gabriel tweeted? Did you see that?
I did not.
So, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't have known who Wenyan Gabriel is. Would have you
known
who
Wenyan... Well, when you said his name, I'm like, I have no idea who you're talking about. So
he wrote, he didn't hear about the trade. So he didn't know he had been traded. And he saw it on Twitter. So he retweeted it. He retweeted Woj's tweet and said, "Damn, I just got Woj'd." Crying emoji.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
When you're scooping the players involved in the trade, that's pretty good. It doesn't speak very highly of the organization that they didn't let him know that before it got out on Twitter. But
yeah,
hey, what can you do there? What can you do?
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Do we really want to spend time talking about the narcissistic man that is Kyrie Irving? We want to talk about it real quickly. The only thing that I thought was funny was he was calling all his teammates, and then the next day he was questionable to play because he had a tight right hamstring. He didn't play, and the team played better. Here's your sign.
I mean, the quote about the last time the Nets were good, they were led by an Irving.
Oh, that was the other one.
Julius Irving, and then now we're being led by Kyrie Irving. I mean, look, I love Kyrie when he was here. I've said it numerous times. He was the perfect second man, wingman to LeBron. He filled in all the holes in LeBron's game perfectly, but he needs to be quiet. There's no benefit to the things he's saying. It feels like every time he opens his mouth, he just comes across as crazier and crazier. And I don't know. I don't know if Durant is the right guy to put the silencer on Kyrie.
No, he's going to get a burner account. This is going to be great. I can't wait till next season, Mike.
I'm starting to think more and more that this whole thing is going to implode, especially if Durant is not 90 to 95% of what he was previously. Let's say Durant comes back at 70% of Kevin Durant. That's going to be a bad scene there in Brooklyn. I get why they did it.
Mike, let's get Joe Harris on the line and talk about it. I'm sure we can get some good scoops from him.
I get why they did it, but I don't know that the combination of those two guys is the right combination.
Yep.
It remains to be seen. Just the Irving then Irving comment though was hilarious to me. I'm like, yeah, that
I saw that and I immediately sent it to you. I want you to know, when I sent that to you, my wife had already gone back to get prepped for the C-section yesterday, and I just sent it to you because I was scrolling through Twitter one last time before, because I knew it was, and I saw that and I'm like, send. I enjoyed
that wholeheartedly, but it just makes no sense. First of all, that's irrelevant. And then calling out his teammates and mentioning some guys and not mentioning other guys. Like, do that behind closed doors. Talk to the coach. Talk to the GM. Have those conversations in the media.
I won't talk about it, but did you see the NBA desktop regarding that or no?
No, I didn't see it.
You need to find the NBA desktop regarding him calling out certain players and not calling the other ones.
All right, I'll be sure to do that.
All right. So I think the last thing you wanted to talk about was All-Star stuff, right? You want to talk All-Star?
Yeah, let's just briefly hit our All-Star starters. I think it's pretty clear cut in both conferences. There might be one spot in each conference that is going to be debatable, and I think the other four in each of the conferences is pretty much set. And then we'll obviously jump back on and talk All-Star reserves once the starters are officially named. And then last year I know we did the draft, so we'll have to do that again. But let's just talk starters real quick. I think it's pretty, as I said, pretty straightforward in both leagues except for maybe one spot. So let's go Eastern Conference.
Taco Fall.
I do not believe Taco Fall is going to end up being a starter. I'm pretty sure that even if the fans had voted him in, that he wasn't going to quite be up to par and make it through. So
it's a sad state of affairs, Mike.
All right, so
you want to start with the Eastern Conference, and I'll start with the Western Conference. Does that sound good?
Sure, that sounds fine. Okay. So in the Eastern Conference, I think clearly Giannis has got to be on there. I think in the backcourt, my two guys in the backcourt would be Kemba and Ben Simmons. And then the other two front court spots, I think I'm going to go with Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid. And so that would be my starting five in the East, which puts two Sixers on there, which, considering Philly's in the fifth spot and has sort of underachieved, I'm not sure that is 100%. It doesn't feel right, but yet I look at the production of those two guys and I start to say, all right, if it's not one of those two guys or both of those guys, who has a clear-cut case to be in instead of them?
And so I have all the same except for one, Mike. I'm a huge Embiid stan, but I don't have Embiid on my list.
Okay.
I have Siakam in his spot. I just feel like he deserves it more. And
it's fair.
Every time Siakam plays, he's giving his 110%, whereas Embiid is not giving 110% every time he's out there. And I know Siakam's missed some games, but Embiid's missed some games too. So,
yeah, they've missed about the same amount of games.
So I went with Siakam, but everything else is the same.
That's fair. I mean, they're both going to clearly be on the team. You could easily reward Siakam for Toronto having a better record than Philly. They're 29-14. Philly's 29-16, so it's basically a wash. They both have missed, I think, 11, 12 games, somewhere in there. Siakam's been really good. We've talked about him a couple times. Embiid, we know what his flaws are. Who's the more talented player? Who has the better potential to be the best player in a game, in a series? It's Embiid, but night to night, I think you're more... I think night to night, you're probably more... You're more likely to know what you're going to get from Siakam versus you're not sure what you're getting from Embiid on any given night. But I still think that Embiid's talent and his production still warrants him being one of the starters. But I have no problem with Siakam either. Right. So that's my Eastern Conference starters.
All right, so let's go Western Conference. So here's who I have. I have LeBron, obviously, AD. I have our favorite player, James Harden. I have Luka, and then this was the one I put Dame here, and I maybe call it recency bias because of the 61 points or whatever, but I think Dame deserves it, so I'm going to give it to him. I don't know. That's where I went. So,
okay, I would have put Dame probably, as I look down the list here of teams, I probably would put Dame as the third guy that I would have considered for that spot. So my other two guys would have been Jokic and Kawhi. And
yeah.
And I can make an argument for both of them, and I can make an argument against both of them. I mean, the argument against Kawhi is just the amount of games.
50% of the
games. Right, the games that he sits out. He never plays back-to-backs. And if everybody was getting that much rest, you could argue that their production would be improved on a per-game basis. And then Jokic started out the first month of the season. People were really wondering what was going on with this guy and where he was. And he's really picked it up since.
He's at the Chuck List here, Mike. That's where he was. Yeah,
there you go. Since December 1st, though, he's really picked it up and been better. Both of those teams, again, they have pretty much identical records. The Clippers have one more win. They have the same number of losses. So I think you're splitting hairs there. I'll give it to Jokic just simply because I want my players to be out on the floor playing and not resting. So I gave it to Jokic. Kawhi is clearly going to make the team. Dame's clearly going to make the team. But my Western Conference starters were the four.
I was trying
to
do it positionally, Mike.
Yeah, the four that you mentioned. I mean, the four that you mentioned. I mean, then all that requires you to do is put Anthony Davis as the four. And no, if I have Jokic playing at the five. And
I was going Anthony Davis at the four, or at the five, LeBron at the four,
right?
Probably Luka at the three, Harden at the two, and Dame at the one. So that's what I had.
Right. I mean, at this point, I think this is one of the interesting discussions, not just with the All-Star game, but with the All-NBA teams at the end of the season. Is positionally, should the NBA just do away with positions? Because really, you look at how all these different guys are playing, and offensively, sometimes they're playing one position, and defensively, they're guarding another position. And it used to be that a lot of the positions were determined by just simply by the player's size.
Yeah.
And now that's irrelevant. Like Ben Simmons, sure, he's a point guard on offense, but he doesn't guard point guards on the other end. Not that he doesn't ever guard them, but he's matching up more with wings and inside players. So I don't know. I think positionally I would tend to go with just let's pick the best five guys regardless of position, both for the All-Star team and after the season.
Yep.
When you get to that All-NBA, just give me the five best guys. Like, I don't think – like, I remember the 1 year DeAndre Jordan was either first or second team All-NBA. That just shouldn't be. You know, he clearly was
$20 million this year, isn't he? Come on.
Probably, but DeAndre Jordan at no point in his career was he one of the top 10 players in the NBA.
Hey, name another player that got locked in a room so that he wouldn't go sign with someone, Mike. Come on.
I cannot name anyone else. However, he still was not one of the top 10 players in the NBA at any point in time.
Yeah, I know.
All
right. So last thing we need to talk about, Mike, what's Zion going to do tomorrow?
Well, on Zion's Eve, I think we have to go back to thinking about where he was going to the draft, where he was coming out of the preseason before he got hurt. And every single sign and indication led you to believe that he was going to be really, really good right out of the gate. And so you look at it now, and the Pelicans are interesting because clearly Brandon Ingram has accelerated his timeline for becoming the type of player that people thought he could be when he was drafted. He's been phenomenal. He's going to be a borderline all-star. The question is going to be, is he going to be rewarded based on his improvement and his statistics, or are people going to kind of hold where the Pelicans are in the standings against him? But he's got a really strong case to make the all-star team. When we start looking at reserves, I'll really kind of dig into what his statistics look like compared to some of the other guys that are going to be on the fringe there at the back end of the West roster. But Zion's going to have to figure out how does he fit into what they're trying to do. And that's what's going to be interesting to see, is how can he impact their team and take them from where they are now. And they've been playing better. They've been playing a lot better. They're 6-4
in their last 17, I think.
They're 6-4 in their last 10, and clearly they've figured something out. So now the question becomes, can you fit Zion in seamlessly where all the things that he does well fit into what you're already doing, or is there a learning curve with him and the other players on the team in terms of incorporating him into what they're trying to do offensively and defensively, where maybe they struggle a little bit to kind of integrate him into what they're doing? So I would anticipate that he's going to come out and I think he's going to look really good. I think he's going to be everything that he was hyped up to be. My question is, at least initially, in let's say the first 10 games,
fit.
Even if he plays really well, how is that going to impact their wins and losses? And that's where I don't know what the impact's going to be. But him individually as a player, I expect him to come out and be pretty solid and do the things that we expected him to do. Now, I don't know how many minutes he's going to play.
Yeah, I didn't see anything about a minutes restriction. I didn't see anything. I'm assuming he will be on a minutes restriction. That would be my guess, at least.
I would think that they would want to keep his minutes, whatever, whether you call it a minutes restriction or they're just, you know, hey, we're going to, you know, our goal is to play this guy 24 minutes or 20 minutes or 26 minutes or 18 minutes, whatever the number is. I would think that their Pelicans are going to have something in mind to make sure that they're not overtaxing him. But I know one thing, that it's going to be really, really exciting for him to get out on the floor. I'm sure the NBA is completely juiced up for him returning to the court.
Well, that's just because they have so many primetime games that the Pelicans still have to play out.
Yeah,
so
there's still a lot. I mean, they've already missed a bunch of them, but I would think, we talked about it last week, I would think that tomorrow night's game is going to be the highest rated regular season game in a while. I would have to think that people are tuning in to see what Zion's going to look like here in a regular season game. So
yeah,
it's going to be fun. I know that. We know he's going to have some crazy highlights, dunks, and he's
just
a fun guy.
Let's hope his shoes hold up.
He's a fun guy to watch. it would be great to be able to see him come back and immediately mesh with Ingram and see New Orleans start to play well and maybe climb back into the playoff picture again, because I think he's going to be everything that he was hyped up to be before the draft, before the season started, before he got injured. I expect him to be must-see TV on most nights if he can stay healthy. And to me, that's the biggest question mark with him is can he stay healthy? Can his body support itself based on his size and just the amount of force and torque that he's putting on his body all the time at 275 or 280 pounds, whatever he weighs, and the ways flying through the air and running up and down the floor. That's what's going to be, I think, interesting about his career is can he stay healthy? To me, that's the only question about him moving forward.
Yeah, so I don't know if you'd seen the picture of people had speculated the one game that he was sleeping on the sideline.
I did see that, yeah.
So did you see what he said today in the press conference?
I did not see what he said.
You all might have seen me meditating on the sidelines. I promise I wasn't sleeping.
I was going to guess visualization. He was visualizing himself out on the floor, so... Hey, meditation's hot right now.
Yep, so. All right, I'm just really interested in seeing how Zion plays tomorrow night. I really think that he could have an impact, but at the same time, I think it's going to look like they're still got to figure out where he's going to fit and everything, and alongside, like you said, Ingram and Holiday and just everything they've got going on. I'm going to say that he's going to score 13 points tomorrow, Mike. 13 points and 6 or 7 rebounds, something like that.
All right, I'm going to use that as your over-under, and I'm going to say over. I'm going to say he's going to go over 13.
Okay. All right. I mean, it'll be just, like I said, we'll definitely be checking that out. We might have to do a quick reaction pod after just talk about what he looks like and how he played.
Over under three dunks.
Oh, over.
He's going to score 13 with over three dunks?
He's going to have four dunks.
Four dunks. All right. I'm going to go over two.
All right. Sounds good.
Anything else?
I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
I don't have anything else. So happy Zion's Eve to everyone out there. We appreciate you listening. As Jason said, we might jump on with an emergency Zion podcast tomorrow night. But thanks for listening today, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.